Hour number two of 3D on this Wednesday morning here in Nashville. Hope everybody's having a great day. Darren McFarland, Derek Mason, and Willie Donick with you every day, 10 to 2, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Richard Deitch joins us every Wednesday as well from Sports Illustrated. So back-to-back hours with somebody from SI.com. Richard, how you doing?
Who'd you have before me?
We had Greg Bishop on last hour talking about his article on Vince Young, which obviously we covered his entire time here, and it was an adventure at times. Certainly never lacking things to talk about, so just kind of just talking about his piece. It was pretty interesting. It's very clear that Vince has not let go of some things that happened here, especially between him and the head coach, Jeff Fisher. I'm sure you've had a chance to read it, or have you?
I have not read the article yet. Good job by me on my own group. But I know it's in there. Bishop's great, by the way. He's a really talented writer. And I know the sort of the top line points from that. The one thing I could say is, man, you know, when you watched Vince Young against USC and, you know, arguably the greatest college football game of all time, I mean, given that guy's combination of, like, size and speed and running ability, passing ability, sort of clutching it, you just figured that guy would have been a star in the NFL. I'm surprised it didn't work, but it didn't work in a big way.
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting dynamic because there's no way around his journey to college, obviously playing on a big stage in Austin, Texas, all the way to the NFL because, you know, when you think about him as an athlete, I'm sure, Richard, he was the biggest, the fastest, the strongest kid at every level, every step of the way. And everybody pampered him. Everybody told him he was great, which happens in life. It's not just sports. People have to realize it's not just sports, but obviously this is what we do, and so we talk about it, and it's out there for everybody to see. And so you would like for it to have been different at some point, like for somebody to kind of help with that. But in the end, it's up to the person to be able to handle all of this. And when you finally have the road bump or the speed bump or the hurdle and you've been pampered and told you're great the whole way, how do you adjust? It's not easy. And obviously Vince did not do a good job at that. He didn't handle that well. But I don't know how many people in that setting could. It's really up to the individual, right, that they're going to have to tackle this new set of problems that they've never had at any level. And now they're not the fastest or the strongest or the biggest guy or the best athlete, and they have to adjust.
Yeah, I mean, that what you're sort of defining there is the difference between people who have 10, 15-year careers or maybe Hall of Fame careers and those who are incredibly gifted at a lower level and flame out. That's one of the reasons why I'm always sort of blown away by just the greatness of LeBron James, who – since he was whatever, 14, 13, 12, certainly 16, was essentially being told by everybody, you are going to be the next great NBA transcendent player. And along the way, he could have sort of fallen in 20 different places, especially from all these people telling him how great he was, but he kind of exceeded expectations, which is kind of amazing, given just how much the expectation was on him, you know. Without knowing Vince's situation, you are right. There are so many people who come into the pros after being incredible college football quarterbacks, and they have to figure it out after the fact. There's no way to sort of define this, but that's what makes sort of sports so interesting, in that you have Vince Young, who was drafted super high, biggest stage as it gets in terms of college football, again, playing in arguably the greatest game of all time. Compare him to Tom Brady, sixth-round pick in Michigan, out of Michigan, had to fight his way up the Michigan game charts, did not come into the league at all with any kind of fanfare, and goes on to arguably be the greatest quarterback of all time. It's always – the draft to me is just endlessly fascinating because it really proves, like, we don't know anything when it comes to sort of human evaluation. I mean, maybe you know, like, a Peyton Manning's going to be great. Like, maybe there are these guys who – you know, you don't need to be a great scout to figure it out, but it's such a fascinating kind of thing in that you really don't know. You're just sort of, you're doing your best possible guess, but who among us would not have thought that Vince Young wouldn't have been a hit?
By the way, that's a great example. The LeBron James example is probably the best example one could come up with, because I believe it was, what, 16 years old he was on the front cover of Sports Illustrated?
Sports Illustrated, yeah. There's a number of people like that who Tiger is one. Now, let's forget about, obviously, what's happened in the last 5-6 years, but he fulfilled his greatness. I mean, he was a guy on the cover of magazines or doing television shows at 7, 8, 9, 10 years old.
Yep.
And went on to that. There's a lot of them in soccer who, interestingly enough, sort of fulfilled it. Guys like Messi, who were targeted super young as sort of can't miss. But then, and again, this will be really like a crazy reference for your audience, but do you remember Freddie Adu?
No question. I was getting
just
ready
thinking
to say
about
that.
Him.
Yep.
Yeah.
Is he in the Where Are They Now issue coming up?
I think we've done him before. But you know,
I think you're right. I think that they did do one.
The American Pele, basically. This was going to be the kid who sort of revolutionized soccer. And there's a guy who just never happened for multiple reasons. One, I think he probably eventually reached a level where he wasn't killing guys. He just wasn't the best. He never really got better after a certain age. I don't know. I mean, it's not really anecdotal, but interestingly enough, maybe there is something to those people who are drafted a little bit lower or who come out of lesser spotlight, who are sort of motivated to be great. You know, it's an impossible science, because obviously there's great guys from Alabama who go into the pros, and there's great guys from LSU. But then, you know, you reverse it. You get someone like Kobe Bryant, who didn't grow up in the States, wasn't really part of the AAU system, played like 1 or 2 years of high school ball, and turns out to be one of the great players of all time. So it's crazy. It's crazy to think about why and who makes it. And there's so many, you know, there's like a 50 million variables. And in Vince's case, I'll have to read the story, but you're right. I mean, the way you act after you get knocked down in pro sports oftentimes can dictate where you're going. And then lastly, I'll just sort of say one thing that's always interesting to me as well is I'm always interested in the guys who were stars in college. This happens a lot in the NBA. They go to the pros and they're not a star, but they figure out a way to kind of be rotation players for their career. Like David West is a great example. He's a great player in college, came to the pros, was a very good player, but you know, never the best player in the league or anything. But these guys figure out a way, if they sort of are really professional, to stay in the league and make millions and millions of dollars for 10, 12, 15 years. And that, to me, is like that's an incredible success story that probably doesn't get written about enough. Are the people who really just become these sort of kind of professionalized pro athletes who stick around in whatever the sport they're in for 10 or 15 years, get the absolute most out of their athletic ability, and have set themselves up for generational wealth.
That's a fascinating topic. By the way, one to throw into the mix.
I think that's a topic we need to write down and come back to.
We could go on and on, but we have to throw. You'd have to throw Michelle Wee in there, right? Like Freddie Adu.
Bryce Harper is another one I thought of.
And Bryce Harper, right now, we would put.
Lived up to that hype, but he's getting there.
He's getting there. He seems to be on the right path. But Freddie Adu never worked out. Michelle Wee, it looks like it's never going to work out.
Although
never
she had her moments, it's
never live up to the hype.
Yeah. Michelle Wee has not lived up to the quote unquote hype, but this is where I think she's significantly different than Freddie Adu. She does play on the LPGA tour regularly and does at least hit the money. So while she's not the Tiger Woods of women's golf, you know, she could turn out to be one of these David West types where she plays 20 years, makes a ton of money, has some good results, and that's a great career. So you know, you weren't Tiger Woods, but you also weren't a total like Todd Marinovich bust or something like that, where you basically, you know, you played like right. 1 year in your
Ryan Leaf.
So I think for Michelle Wee, the jury's a little out on that, because she's still competing on the tour, and at least I don't follow the LPGA that close, but it seems like she's in, you know, she's placing in the top 10 or top 20 in tournaments.
Now, Richard, you did a roundtable. We're talking with Richard Deitch, SI.com. You did a roundtable with some sports writers that have come out openly gay in lieu of the Ryan Callahan, who played in the NFL for a good bit with the Kansas City Chiefs and the New England Patriots. And you said, I think it was, what, 7 or 8 of these individuals in a roundtable, and asked them to discuss, you know, what went on throughout their career. In that roundtable, did anyone talk about how their careers would have been had they come out sooner rather than later, because it seems like everyone, you know, kind of waited to come out, and rightfully, and I understand probably why, but did they talk about or elaborate much about, had they come out earlier, what their careers would have been like?
Yeah, that's a great question, fascinating question. One guy, and this again is a panel of seven LGBT sports media people who are out publicly out, work for pretty big places, and I just sort of wanted to get a sense of, you know, what's it like being gay in the sports media in terms of how, if at all, that their sexuality sort of affects their job or how people react and treat them. So one guy is a guy named Dave Doyle. He's a well-known MMA writer in that world. And he said, and this was pretty interesting to me, that he spent a lot of his 20s not out. And he was out to his friends, but not out in the profession. And he believed that really cost him networking, because what he would do is he wouldn't necessarily want to socialize with other media people and at sort of industry events, because he sort of just never felt himself. And he thought to himself, and maybe, again, that you're coming out on whatever you're coming out. That's your own personal journey. And some people can't do it at 20. Some people can't do it at 60, obviously. That's their choice. But he thought that if he had come out earlier, he would have probably – his career would have been in a bigger place, because he would not have been hesitant or afraid to sort of network with people in the business who could have – gotten him maybe bigger jobs. I thought that was pretty interesting. And the other thing that just, and this doesn't surprise me at all, but all of these panelists, from Steve Buckley, who's a columnist for the Boston Herald, to Christopher Hine, who covers the Blackhawks for the Chicago Tribune, they all said that it's really just not an issue with younger athletes, because most of these younger athletes have or know someone who's gay. It's either a friend, someone in the family, you know, someone, a colleague, business manager, whatever. And that's where society has changed a lot, in that it's the athletes part. Athletes don't really see them in terms of sexuality terms. Now, I don't think any of these guys would doubt that, you know, behind closed doors, you know, maybe stuff said on the bus, maybe stuff said in hotels or whatever, but that was interesting to me, and it sort of gives me a little bit of hope that that today's athlete, and obviously even tomorrow's athlete, they're just going to know out people, so it's not that much of an issue. And then finally, and they all agreed this, and this is not necessarily any new revelation, but they believe that the true moment in this country, which could really have an impact on young kids, would be if a star in one of the big sports, most likely, or most what would have the sort of the most power, would be a star in the NFL who came out during his career, that they believed would really have an impact on younger athletes not being afraid to come out, and even just your everyday kid who's trying to figure it out at 13 or 14. That's they all believe that would be a major sort of powerful thing, either the NFL or maybe the NBA. But Jason Collins, who did come out, was at the end of his career. Just Michael Sam, obviously, things happened. Those guys just did not have the impact the way a starting quarterback or like some NBA superstar would. Whether that happens or not, it's a great discussion for you guys. There's so much that would be at risk for them, potentially financially. Every place and every city they went to, they'd sort of be subject to media attention. It's a big risk. You would need to have somebody who really knows themselves, who's so sure of themselves, who's so super confident that all that noise outside wouldn't bother them.
Now, did you get a sense of, you know, whether they felt that each league can do more to help guys and females come out?
Yeah, I think the reason why they did my panel and panels like that is for that exact reason, Derek. And one of the guys in the panel, Dave Doyle, had never come out. I think he came out basically in my column, although he'd been out to his friends and stuff. But, they all believe that, you know, it's very possible that there would be some young person somewhere reading that column who was trying to figure out their own sexuality or knew that they were gay, and they hope that they could read that and be like, all right, like, the sports world, which we think of as testosterone, very heterosexual, it doesn't necessarily mean that I can't be part of that in terms of the media. So I think that's the reason they all did the panel. The other thing, too, is everybody I talked to, relatively speaking, was either 30 or above. And I think they've all kind of figured themselves out who they are, and they're not, there's not a question of who they are. Kate Scott is married to a woman. Some of them have been in long-term relationships. So they're just, like, for lack of a better cliche, they're just adults. They know who they are, and talking about these issues for them is not taboo or anything like that. And I think that's the reason. So I think they did it is, one, I think they found the concept interesting, but I think they also really truly believe in their heart that, like, if there's one, like, 18-year-old who's heading into college, who's gay, who's not sure that they can go into the sports media because they're sort of intimidated by it's such a heterosexual field, you know, maybe that one person's like, well, you know, look at this guy from the Chicago Tribune, or look at this guy in Boston, or look at this woman who's, calling the calling college basketball for the Pac-12 network. So I think that's why they did it.
We're talking to Richard Deitch from Sports Illustrated's The Media Circus. Richard, we had a good conversation the other day with Luke Kornet from Vanderbilt, who was not drafted, but he signed a two-way contract with the New York Knicks. So he's a real witty guy. Well, that's where I was going, because he's a real witty guy. He's an interesting guy. We're really rooting for him. But with Phil Jackson's announcement today that he's parting ways, can you put into words for people that just live around here that don't live in New York just what a circus the Knicks have become? I don't know where you start.
Do we have time? Do we need to take a break?
Yeah, I mean, listen, anything James Dolan touches turns to bleep. I mean, that's really basically the best way I can describe it. Madison Square Garden sort of pays you an inordinate amount of money, and it never works out. It's basketball in New York City is really an institution. I mean, you go in different parts of different boroughs, and there's kids playing every day in playgrounds. I'm not saying that this doesn't happen everywhere, but, you know, it's really a city. There's something about the soul of the city. Basketball sort of reflects the soul of New York City. And so we have had a basketball team here for so many years that just anything that sort of can go dysfunctionally or problematic happens. The biggest reason, of course, is because the owner, James Dolan, has meddled into everything. He doesn't particularly know basketball. He's one of these dudes who naturally inherited a ton of cash from his pops and has really screwed up many times, from his hires of Isaiah Thomas to other stuff. The interesting thing here is he hired Phil Jackson and backed away. He sort of just walked away from basketball and was like, okay, I'm going to let this guy do his thing. And as great a coach as Phil Jackson was with the Lakers and the Bulls, his, in my opinion, his sort of ego and smugness killed them as a GM. He is very inflexible in terms of how basketball should be played, and I don't think he was interested in the job the way these obsessed GMs are. And so, we are 3 years later, once again, with the New York Knicks trying to figure out who they are and what they are. And I think the reason this happened is I think somebody, whether it's James Dolan or one of his sort of minions, realized that Phil Jackson was about to alienate the only significant asset that the Knicks have, which is Kristaps Porzingis, a 21-year-old potential star. And, you know, Knicks fans would have literally just revolted on Broadway had Phil Jackson screwed that up. And,
well, it doesn't help.
Phil Jackson gone. But, yeah, it's literally like one of the running jokes in New York is the Knicks. I mean, in fact, the only person maybe more unpopular than Donald Trump in New York City is, generally speaking, James Dolan.
I'll tell you what, the media probably didn't help either, because, I mean, Phil Jackson got crushed on a daily basis.
He did. I understand people don't like the New York City media sometimes, and a lot of that's justified. But Phil Jackson took him. I actually was there for the opening press conference. I went. Phil Jackson talked about how transparent his administration was going to be. He was going to talk to the media, and Phil Jackson then just basically never made himself available. So, you know, you say that you're going to be transparent, and then you take off and don't talk. Once bad things happen, Oof. You can't be surprised that the New York media is going to come down. And on top of that, obviously, it's a competitive tabloid town.
Right.
And when things, as you know, go wrong in New York, the New York Post and the Daily News, they sort of light you up. It's just It's not always fair, but that's just what it is here.
Just so you know, I'm going to go on and give you a week heads up. Next week, we are definitely going to ask you about the 30 for 30, Mike and the Mad Dog. That's coming out next in July.
All right. I have seen it, and I can.
You've seen it.
Okay, good.
I have seen it. Right? Yeah, I can give you guys. First of all, you want to talk about, New York City arrogance? You look like in the dictionary. The big photo of Mike Francesa. The most arrogant sports talk host in the country, bar none. I mean, I don't think there's an argument.
That's saying something
to be had. Yeah.
Yeah, that
just
is
saying something in an industry with massive narcissists.
No.
Mike Francesa is. He's on the Mount Rushmore of ego. There's no doubt about it.
You just painted quite the picture for radio. That will be first up next week. Hey, thanks for doing this.
All right, we'll do it.
Have a great 4th, okay?
You too. Thanks, guys.
All right, Richard Deitch, Sports Illustrated. Great listen every week.
There you go.
He's seen it.
Yeah.
By the way, what he just said about Francesa.
Now, that's saying something.
In this business?
That's saying something. If you are the biggest, yeah, that's.
Wow.
Hey, somebody,
that is not a flattering picture.
Somebody got to hold the title of something, and he does.
Hey, he's made a lot of money.
Uh-huh.
We will come back and discuss a lot you just heard. We'll do that next.